Professor Shuhai Zhao, thanks so much for coming on to Evolution Soup all the way from your office at Virginia Tech, USA. You are a paleobiologist and geobiologist studying the interactions between the biosphere and its environments at critical transitions in our planet's history, specializing in that mysterious time that led up to the explosive first appearance of animals on Earth, known as the Cambrian period. So how have you been doing, Shuhai? Things are getting back to normal in much of the world, finally. So have you been able to get back out into the field to continue your research?
Yeah, things are getting better now. We're getting back to normal. My university has announced that their instruction will be in person in fall 2021. So that's great. The university stadium will be operated in full capacity next semester. We have been able to do some field work nearby. In fact, last week, I took some of my students to look at some of the rocks in Southwest Virginia, about a couple of hours drive from here. But international travel is still very much limited. So we haven't been able to travel internationally. And I would love to do that because a lot of my field site is in Asia and South America. So hopefully, later this year or next year, we'll be able to do international travel and able to see some rocks outside U.S.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Well, I've wanted to do a show about the Cambrian explosion for a very long time now, and so I'm really looking forward to this. But before we start, let's just hear a little bit about your background. Shuhai, what led you into the world of science, and in particular, this period of Earth's past that existed between 500 million and 600 million years ago?
So I did my undergraduate in geology at Peking University some years ago. And then I worked a couple of years in the industry and at academy. Before I pursued my PhD degree in biology at Harvard University. So my background is geology and biology. And I really was interested in this interaction between the biosphere and the environment because of my background in both geology and biology. And take it back into geological past. And I chose to study this Ediacaran-Cambrian transition because this is a time period around 500, 600 many years ago where animals began to radiate, began to expand ecologically to make an impact on the surface environment of the Earth. And also because this is the enigmatic nature of the so-called Cambrian explosion, which has puzzled many scientists since Charles Darwin identified this phenomenon as a major unresolved scientific question. So I sort of saw this as a challenge, but also as an opportunity to make some contributions to improve our understanding of the early evolution of life on Earth.
And that's the thing about Darwin, isn't it? He was able to pinpoint a lot of things, but he didn't fully understand all of it.
Right. We have to put that in a historical context because, at his time, there were little fossils, virtually no Precambrian fossils. So that was very puzzling to him. And in the last 160 years, a lot of new discoveries. So things have changed. I think if Darwin lived it today, he would be very happy to see all these new discoveries. Absolutely. in the rocks older than the Cambrian.
Okay, let's talk about the Cambrian period. People have probably heard of the so-called Cambrian explosion, but they may not fully understand what occurred during this geologic time period. So can we begin by having an overview of the Cambrian and what is meant by the Cambrian explosion?
Yeah, the Cambrian explosion. I personally prefer the term Cambrian radiation, but they basically means the same thing. What it means is a geologically rapid episode of evolution in which animal became you know, diverse and abundant, and it became ecologically important. And it happened in the early part of the Cambrian period, which is a period of about 55 million years, starting at about 542 and ending at 485 million years ago. And the Cambrian explosion lasted about 30 million years during the Cambrian period, so from 540 to about 510. So it's about the first half of the Cambrian period. So the Cambrian explosion is actually a pretty long period if from our perspective. I would like to emphasize a few aspects of the Cambrian explosion. First, the Cambrian explosion is not about the origin of life. Okay, the origin of life occurred 3.5 billion years ago or earlier. The Cambrian explosion is about animals, and the animal is just, you know, a small part of you know, the biosphere. Second, the Cambrian explosion is not about the origin of animals. The origin of animals happened before the Cambrian. The Cambrian explosion of radiation is about the rapid expansion, diversification of animals. So that was, you know, what the Cambrian explosion was not. But what the Cambrian explosion is, it basically can break down into three things. One I just mentioned is the, you know, rapid. When I say rapid, I meant geologically rapid is 30 million years. That's a lot of time. To put it in context, the entire evolutionary history of our genus, Homo, is just about 2 to 3 million years. So the Cambrian explosion is 10 times more than that. Wow. But what makes the Cambrian explosion important is that, you know, after 510 million years ago, there's nothing like this rapid radiation or rapid diversification of animals. So during that 30 million years, almost all major animal phyla evolved, and there are about 20-25 of them. And in the next 510 million years, no new animal phyla evolved. So that's what makes us a very unusual, unique, interesting event. So that's the number of animals, right? The variety of animals. But also, the Cambrian explosion is about the rapid evolution of skeletonized and particularly mineralic skeletonized animals like shells and clams and things like that. Now, again, this is not about the origin of animal biomineralization. The origin of animal biomineralization happened about 10 million years before the Cambrian explosion. But the Cambrian explosion is a time when skeletonized animals rapidly expand and diversify. And a third, the Cambrian explosion, it's also characterized by a very rapid expansion of animal activities that left traces and trails and burrows in the sedimentary rock record. So if you go to take a look at, you know, Cambrian rocks and compare that to pre-Cambrian rocks, you see the difference visually. And again, this is not about the origin of animal locomotion. It's not about the origin of animal burrowing, because that happened before the Cambrian. But it's the Cambrian explosion is a time when, you know, these mobile animals began to diversify, began to to interact with the sediment began to leave, a large amount, a great diversity of what we call trace fossils in the rock record. So two things that came in, they're not about the origin of life, not about the origin of animals. And the three things about what the Cambrian explosion is, it's about rapid diversification of animals, variety of animals. It's about the diversification of skeletonized or biomineralized animals. It's about diversification of mobile animals that, left a trace in a geological record.
Right. And for anyone who doesn't know, a trace fossil is not a fossil itself. It's like a burrow or a track or an impression. Isn't that right?
Exactly. So burrows, tracks, trails, and things like that. So if you watch if you go to the beach and look at the ocean bottom, sometimes they see, tracks made by crabs, for example. So that's if it's fossilized, then it's a trace fossil.
So what kind of animals lived during the Cambrian period?
That's what really puzzled Charles Darwin 160 years ago. So when he looked at, and even by then, there are a lot of Cambrian fossils, perhaps the best known are trilobites, right? Yeah. This is an area where paleontologists that make a unique contribution, paleontologists like me. You can't find an answer any other ways. Only by looking at the fossil record can you answer this question, what kind of animals lived in the Cambrian Ocean? So during the Cambrian, and if you go to look at some Cambrian rocks, what do you find is, there are a lot of arthropods fossils, just like today. If we look at modern biosphere, arthropods are the most diverse, dominate animals. And so they were in the Cambrian. So there's some familiar arthropods like trilobites that I mentioned, but also there are a number of very bizarre and strange arthropods that lived in the Cambrian. Things like anomalocaris, sometimes you probably see that in the news, or Parbinia. So those are very strange arthropod animals back in the Cambrian. But there are also other types of animals like sponges and other phylum that are still living with us today, brachiopods that are still with us today, mollusks, and that's your nautiloids and oysters and clams and scallops, modern representatives of mollusks. But the phylum mollusks is also represented in the Cambrian fossils. And surprisingly, there's a group of animals known as preapulids that's also known as a penis worm that relatively common in several Cambrian deposits, including the famous Berger Shale biota in Canada and the slightly older Xinjiang biota in South China. So that's a little surprising because preapulids are not that common in modern ocean. So like I said, there are about 20, 25 or so animal phyla that are living today, and all of them were represented during the Cambrian, and some of them have relatives that look very strange from modern perspective. So not only animals, obviously, there are seaweeds, algae, microbes, and other type of protists that lived in the Cambrian oceans. The Cambrian land ecosystem, however, was very different from today. So vascular plants, land plants, had not evolved, not yet evolved during the Cambrian. So the land ecosystem was probably colonized only by microbes in the Cambrian period. So there were no land plants in the Cambrian, at least, you know, from the fossil record, we didn't see any macroscopic land plants in the Cambrian.
And so the most famous ones, of course, are trilobites, and they lived for such a long time, but they disappeared relatively quickly, didn't they?
Yeah, they disappeared about 250 many years ago. So they lasted from, let's say, you know, 520 to 250 many years ago. So, you know, that's, you know, more than 270 million years of time. And they're most abundant in the Cambrian and the subsequent period, the Ordovician period. And that's when, you know, they evolve very fast, and we can use them to correlate rocks deposited in different parts of the world.
All right. And just one last thing on this, which comes to mind, is there is one particular creature which is so odd. It was named after a hallucination. I think they call it hallucinogenia. Isn't that right?
Yeah. So this is a very interesting fossil, and it has a very interesting history in terms of its research. Hallucinogenia is one of the fossils that look tantalizingly similar to some living animal phyla, living animal group, a group called Ornithophorin, but also, you know, different in some aspects. It has paired legs, but also has, you know, spikes on the back. So initially, paleontologists didn't see the paired legs, but they saw the pale spikes on the back, so they thought that the spikes were legs, and they were walking on the spikes.
Yeah, they had it upside down, didn't they?
Yeah, they had it upside down. It's not until later. when the pale legs were discovered, then paleontologists were able to, you know, to turn it in the right position.
Well, the Cambrian explosion was a sudden, geologically speaking, appearance of all kinds of relatively simple animals. It's when shells and hard parts, the precursors to skeletons, first evolved. And it's thanks to this innovative period that the world later saw fish, reptiles, and eventually mammals. But why do we think this explosion happened? What are some of the theories?
Mark, this is a really good question. And I would not pretend that we had the final say, and not pretend that we have solved this question, but there are several hypotheses to account for, you know, when the Cambrian explosion happened, when did, and the magnitude of this this evolutionary event. And one of the earlier hypotheses was that, you know, this was related to the Cambrian explosion, was related to an episode of oxygen increase. When you think about that, it's not surprising, because all animals need oxygen to survive, and they need a lot of oxygen to survive, particularly if they are metabolically active. Animals that need to move, some animals are predators, they have to move fast, and the prey need to escape from the predators. So they need oxygen to support their very high metabolic rate, specific metabolic rate. So that was the first hypothesis. But recent research seems to suggest that, yes, oxygen is a requirement for animal evolution. But it's not a limiting requirement. Oxygen, perhaps, this requirement perhaps was met long before the Cambrian explosion. So that indicates something else triggered the Cambrian explosion. And what that something else is, this something else could be the evolution of new genetic wiring that allowed the development of morphologically complex animals that can perform certain functions that ultimately led to positive ecological feedbacks. For example, I mentioned predation, predators, and that involves a lot of coordination and local motion, and that involves a complex neural system, muscular system, and things like that. And ultimately, you need that genetic network, genetic wiring, to develop these capabilities. And once this is put in place, then it's possible for animals to perform certain function that may led to positive ecological feedback. For example, the arms race between the predators and the prey that, accelerate evolutionary rate. So that can account for the magnitude of the Cambrian explosion.
So the appearance of predators could have started it off.
Yeah. So it could have accelerated. So that's a contributing factor that led to the explosion. Is if we use the explosion analogy, you need some sort of fuse and then the explosives. The ecological feedback, the predator and the prey sort of positive feedback, are the explosives, if we will.
So when you say an arms race, you mean like a predator would come after certain prey and they would over time develop harder shells to protect themselves. And in turn, the prey would perhaps evolve, sharper, claws to get through the shells and so on and so forth.
Exactly. So, when the predators find a way to, catch the prey find a way to escape from the predator, and the predator find a better way of doing his business.
And there was also a theory about the beginning of eyes and vision as well.
Yeah, I saw that as a part of this ecological feedback. Obviously, you need first, have the genetic capability to make an eye, which is a very complex structural. But some of the genes contribute to the development of eyes pre-exist the animals. So basically, they have to have the capability to sense light. But there are more than that. But once you have the capability to sense light, to view the world, you can perhaps better escape from the predators, right? So that's part of the predation prey positive feedback.
But I think you have said that you think it might be a combination of these things. Is that
right? Right. So I think it's a combination. So the genetic you can think this as a fuse, and the ecological feedback, you can think this as an explosive, to use that analogy. Oxygen, you need to have oxygen, obviously, for explosive to happen, you have to have oxygen, right? So otherwise, you can't, the chemical reaction would not happen without oxygen. So all the things have to be in place. But whether which one comes first, which one comes later, that's the debate now. So the last piece of the contributing factor would be the limiting factor.
Well, there are those who say that the Cambrian explosion was so sudden and that its animals appeared so seemingly out of nowhere that it was akin to a creation event and that nothing existed before this time. But there was a period before the Cambrian that we now call the Ediacaran. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Ediacaran period, that's the reason I study paleontology and I've been working on the Ediacaran period for a number of years now. So, like you mentioned, the Ediacaran period precedes the Cambrian period, and it started about 635 many years ago, and ended where the Cambrian starts, so ended about 540 many years ago. So the Ediacaran period is about 95 many years in duration. So that's much longer than the Cambrian period. So in Darwin's time, there were virtually no Precambrian fossils, no Ediacaran fossils, not to mention Ediacaran animals. There's no fossils, Ediacaran fossils known to them, period. So this is why Darwin gets so frustrated. And, this is one of his great headaches, because his natural selection theory predicts the existence of animals before the Cambrian. Now, in that last, particularly in the last 60 years, there have been remarkable discoveries about Ediacaran fossils and including Ediacaran animal fossils. And I happen to have a few pieces of specimens here I can show it to you, and including things like this. This is a Dickinsonia. So in this white cowl, you can see this. So this is a piece of Dickinsonia fossil, about 560 many years old.
So it's circular. It's a bit like a plate, isn't it?
It's a bit like plate, and there's some structures in it, and you can probably get better pictures online. Sometimes it's tiny. Sometimes it be half meter in diameter, and it can move. It can move. And that suggests is some sort of mobile animals. And I have another piece of this is about 550 many years old. Wow. And you can see this little thing here. This is the trail of the animal.
Okay? Oh yes.
This is a trail, and this is the animal itself.
Ah.
So this is the animal. Was moving on the bedding surface, leaving a trail behind it, and then died. And then the trail and the animal body were preserved together. So we can now not only say that this animal was mobile, but we can link the mobile animals and the trail it made.
Wow.
But a lot of times you just see things like this. So this is just a trail, just the trace fossil, and yes. This is a trace fossil that I'm getting left and right so this is a barrel, and then it'll come out and make another barrel, and come out and make another barrel. So there are a lot of this trace fossils in the Ediacaran period. And also, there were Ediacaran skeletonized animals that learned how to make a bimineralized skeleton. So there are animals in the Ediacaran. There are mobile animals that make traces in the Ediacaran. There are also bimineralized animals in the Ediacaran period. What that means is that the Cambrian explosion has a prehistory in the preceding Ediacaran period, at least about 10 to 30 many years before the Cambrian explosion. You sort of see this prelude to the Cambrian explosion, that where animals evolved, mobile animals evolved, and bimineralizing animals also evolved. I think Darwin would certainly be pleased to see this fossil evidence that I just showed you.
Absolutely.
So yes, Cambrian animals did not come from nowhere.
Hmm. But I guess they weren't terribly obvious because there weren't that many hard parts or shells or skeletons. They were soft bodies mostly. So paleontologists basically missed them.
Yes. they're soft body, so that requires a unusual preservational condition for them to be preserved in the fossil record. So I suspect most of them are soft body, the ones that I showed you. There are a few that are, that had hard parts. But they are also, you know, less common and they're less diverse as far as we can tell from the fossil record. So that makes it more difficult to get a full picture to, because if you have a lot of this, so that's what make Cambrian explosion important, because that's a, you see a radiation or expansion of animals, but they are pre-Cambrian Ediacaran animal fossils. Just that most of them are soft-bodied, and they're probably very few, and they're also very relatively simple compared to the Cambrian ones.
Right. And I know that I think I'm right in saying that one of the remaining problems is linking up what could have evolved into what in the Cambrian. In other words, what are some of the possible, are there ancestors rather in the Ediacaran? For instance, where did trilobites evolve from? There is a creature called Spirigina, which looks a bit like a trilobite. Could that have been its ancestor?
Yeah, so that's still uncertain. And I think you raised a very important question. Just because there were animals in the Ediacaran does not mean that those Ediacaran animals were direct ancestors to the Cambrian animals. But what that suggests is that because you have animals in the Ediacaran and you have animals in the Cambrian, even if the Ediacaran animals were not the direct ancestor of the Cambrian animals, the occurrence of animals in both Ediacaran and Cambrian means that at least some of the animals must have crossed the Ediacaran-Cambrian boundary, unless the Ediacaran animals and the Cambrian animals are evolved independently or evolved de novo. That is less likely because animals have so many. As far as we know, animals evolved once and on once. The capability for local motion. And some of the, for example, this one you can see it is a bilateral symmetric animal, just like many of the living animals that has a left and right and a head and a tail and a back and a belly side, and that body construction. Involves a complex set of genetic apparatuses, and that complex genetic apparatuses evolved only once. So even if this one is not a direct ancestor of a Cambrian animal, it used the same set of genes make the animal body. So that means some of they're relative to the Cambrian. They're cousins to the Cambrian animals.
Shihai, these periods of time are so long ago, 500 million to 600 million years ago. It's quite mind-boggling. Carbon dating is probably useless in gauging these time periods. So how does science determine the age of fossils and trace fossils that existed so far back in time?
Yes, Mark, you're right that carbon dating is probably not very useful in determining the age of these Cambrian Ediacaran rocks. But there are other techniques that scientists can use to date older rocks. There's a technique called uranium lead dating. The principle is the same as carbon-14 dating. Basically, you have a radioactive isotope that decays at a regular pace. So you can look at how many of the daughter isotope and how many of the parent isotope remain in the system and calculate the age. So the principle is the same. The geological clock, so to speak, that we use to date older rocks is a slower clocks than the carbon-14 clock. So the carbon 14 clock ticks very fast. So it's is best for younger rocks, because in older rocks, all the carbon 14 is gone and it virtually has no carbon 14 to analyze, right? But there are other radioactive decay system that you know, decays very slowly. The half-life of carbon 14, for example, is a little less than 6,000 years. So it's good for typically, you know, 10 half-lives. So 10 half-life, each half-life, the pan isotopes decreases by 50%. So after 10 half-lives, it's 2 to the 10th. So it's about 1,000th of what was originally there still remaining. So, you know, carbon 14 is good for samples that are younger than, you know, let's say 50,000 years or 60,000 years in age. For this 500, 600 million year old sample, you need to have uranium lead that has a much longer half-life to be able to determine their age. But the principle is the same.
It's such a fascinating period in our Earth's history, and I'm very grateful that you've been able to spare the time to talk about your research. So what are you working on currently, Shihai? What are your latest projects?
My current research interest is to broaden and deepen the study of early animal evolution. So by broadening my research is to explore the Ediacaran period using interdisciplinary tools, particularly to understand the interplay between life and environment, how life changed the environment, and how environment changed life or evolution. There are still a lot of unresolved questions about the Ediacaran evolution. For example, how much oxygen was there? What kind of animals, whether there's any ecological interactions between Ediacaran animals and other forms of life? Whether oxygen was a limiting factor for animal activity in the Ediacaran period? And climate change is a big topic in the Ediacaran, because the Ediacaran followed the wake of what is known as the Snowball Earth glaciation, which is perhaps one of the largest glaciation in Earth history, and how that had an impact on biological evolution. So the second aspect is to deepening my research. By deepening, what I meant is to look at older rocks. So geologists usually use the word deep to mean ancient, because the rocks are stacked on top of each other. So older layers or deeper rocks are older. So we have been looking at the geological periods before the Ediacaran periods, and that's the Cryogenian. I mentioned Snowball Earth. Cryogenian period is the period when Snowball Earth glaciation happened, and the period before the Cryogenian, the Tonian period, to look at the evolutionary history before the Ediacaran and in deeper history. So this, you know, not surprisingly, the deeper we look, the stranger the world looked like, the more challenging to make sense of everything we discover. But it's also more exciting to, you know, to look at older rocks and to answer questions that that perhaps have the potential to reshape our understanding of early evolution of animals and life in general. So this is what, you know, makes me, you know, excited about my current and future research.
Wow, looking forward to all of that.
Thanks. Yeah.
I will leave links to your work and social media in the description below. And all that's left to say is thank you very much indeed for coming on to Evolution Soup.
Well, thank you very much, Mark, for having me. I really enjoyed that, and I hope the audience will enjoy this as well.